24 minutes to 2 o'clock. Ray in for Zanya this afternoon. Talking about the coronavirus, and we were talking a little bit about it in the past half hour, and our discussion sort of went around, what is your business doing to make sure that the coronavirus doesn't come inside? That's, you know, you take those precautions. We're not trying to spread panic, and maybe we've seen, what, 7 cases so far of the coronavirus. Maybe we don't see any more. Maybe we see a whole lot more. But also, maybe this is a very good lesson for what will happen in future if another type coronavirus comes along, or maybe this one does and it causes a whole lot of mayhem. So what we thought we'd do this afternoon on the show is talk about your business, talk about what should you be doing with your business, and I think most importantly, how is this going to affect your business? On the line is Vanessa Terwell, Vice Chairperson of the Institute of Risk Management, the Western Cape Committee. Good afternoon, Vanessa.
Hi, Ray.
Great to have you on. And we've also got futurist at Tomorrow Today, Dr. Graham Codrington. Good afternoon, Graham.
Afternoon, Ray. And hi, Vanessa.
Right. There we go. Right, Vanessa, let's start with you then. When it comes down to businesses, I mean, what are we looking at now? If you have your own business, what should you be thinking about?
Ray, I think basically it's twofold. You know, we've had a time lapse from the rest of the world in terms of how long it's taken for us to get our first cases. And I think businesses, we've been able to watch how things have unfold before we get to a point where we have to now take it personally and start looking within our organizations. But really from a risk management perspective, looking at who are our stakeholders, how does our organization fit within its context, which are your sort of prescribed risk management processes, to really understand what is our relationship with the rest of the world, particularly the countries that are very high risk and high rates of infection. And then what is our travel context? Are we involved in a lot of big events? Do we have projects across the world? Do we have a lot of Eastern and European countries that are coming to us to operate? Are we import-export? Really, what is our connection with the rest of the world? And getting to a point where we can start to proactively put things in place that can help us to limit what the impact is going to be if this gets worse. And if it does get worse, have things in place from a business continuity and resilience perspective that we can now respond and know exactly what we need to do. So it's not a mad panic, a big rush, and we're unprepared. So we've had time to get ourselves prepared, but using the existing processes within our organization of risk management, of business continuity, to really assess what our exposure is to this, who are our stakeholders, what are our contexts, and really get to grips with understanding our organization's fit. And I'm sure we'll get onto it just now about limiting panic and the hysteria through facts and where we're actually communicating information from.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we're all on our phones all the time looking at social media. So this morning I saw one article saying, don't panic, more people die from the normal flu and this too shall pass and we'll be fine. Then I saw another one that said that this coronavirus is a mixture of SARS and HIV all in one. Graham, is this panic out of control? Do we need to all just calm down?
I suppose, Ray, at the moment we need to say to the people who aren't panicking at all that it's probably time to panic a bit, and that the people who are panicking too much that it's time to calm down. You know, and I think you're exactly right. Those are the two poles that we're seeing at the moment. The people saying, you know, this is the end of the world, and other people saying this is nothing. It really is somewhere in between at the moment. And what we're seeing, and this is our job as futurists, is, you know, we don't predict the future, but we develop scenarios. So we begin to look at what might happen. And right now, I think it's very clear that we need to be looking at sort of worse and even worst case scenarios. And I think it's helpful for people to think both what happens next in the next few weeks, and then what happens later after that. in the next few weeks, it's very important for us to do everything we can to slow down the spread of the disease. Two main reasons. You want to give time for the scientists to develop the vaccine. That's what we need for viruses. You develop a vaccine, you take it, you get immunity, you sort it. It's just like the flu in that sense. Yeah. And they need time. You can't, that process can not really be speeded up. The second thing is that you need time for the medical system to prepare. We've just heard in the last day that in South Africa now hospitals all have single entry points, and you're needing to wash hands. If you are already sick, you need masks. We've just got to make sure that we can set those processes up, that the businesses who are making decisions about entry, things you were talking about before the news, about changing their fingerprint access and things like that. Just got to give people time to get all of that in place. But, and this is the point, you've got to then get those things in place. You can't take the time, you've got to just sit around doing nothing. Probably in 2 or 3 months' time, literally as soon as that, we will realize that we can't contain this disease. We've slowed it down, but a lot of us are going to get it. For most people, it's not going to be too much of an issue, but for those who are vulnerable, it's going to be devastating. And in a few months' time, we're not going to be quarantined. We're going to be living with this as normal in our world, but right now we've got to slow down the spread.
All right, Vanessa, let me bring you in now what Graham said. Slowing it down, many companies are saying to themselves, should we be cancelling flights? Let's start there.
Well, yeah, can we actually afford to do that? Events, conferences, cancelling flights. I've got a business trip next week, but I think we can't. Economically, it's not viable to do that, but we can equip our organizations to be able to deal with it. Not shaking hands anymore. It's not now a sign of disrespect. It's now actually a sign of trying to protect our health. Being aware of what we're touching, being aware of who we are interacting with, and not physical interactions anymore. But I don't think it's feasible for us to start cancelling our businesses, because that's going to cause so many more trickle-on effects, economic effects, social, business, operational, if we do start cancelling. I think we have to mitigate it. And as Graham said, not quarantine ourselves anymore at a point, but start to actually live with it. And I think that will also start to equip us, as you said earlier, with the next virus that happens, because this isn't going to be the only one. So putting systems in place to work out how to manage it.
Graham, I actually want to bring you in, and I think, Vanessa, you got a very good point there, is what do we do now? Because 9/11, and both of you will remember 9/11, what happened there. The world changed forever because it changed the way we went into airports and got onto planes. No longer could you take some, I don't know, Oros with you or something, because it's a very innocent drink. But terrorists were then making bombs out of liquids and toothpaste and all sorts of things like that. Graham, has the world now changed?
I think it has. I think that is what we need to see as the most plausible scenario going forward. This is not just going to be a little blip and then we get over it, like SARS or Ebola were. You know, we contained those. Those were massively virulent diseases, and we managed to contain them. I think what we're going to discover is that we'll get a vaccine, and just like with the flu, every year you're going to get your COVID-19 vaccine, and you should be fine. The problem is, and Vanessa is exactly right with your thinking, if you are not in a vulnerable group, so if you are a young, fit, and healthy person, you can probably think about going about your normal life. The problem is, though, that the elderly, people who are already immune compromised, and that includes a lot of people with HIV and TB across South Africa and Africa, people who have high blood pressure, that seems to be now something that research is coming out of Wuhan saying that anything to do with your heart, or people like me, for example, who have asthma, where if our disease, whatever sickness we get, typically goes into our chest, we are high risk. And so right now, you're not only thinking about yourself, but obviously you're thinking about other people. You might be fine if you get it. But what if you visit your elderly parents at an old age home? And this runs like it did in Seattle, in Washington, just runs through an old age home. So we want to keep our lives going. We don't want to shut down all the schools and shut down all the businesses. But we've also got to be thinking about how do we protect the vulnerable. So keep the vulnerable. If there are people immune compromised, elderly people in your family, in your community, just try and limit where they go out to, limit who gets to see them. Think about it. Wash their hands, wash your hands before you see them. We've just got to take the vulnerable. I might be fine, but what about other people? And I think that's where we are at the moment. It's not panic, but it is consideration.
Not panic, but consideration. But there has been panic. And I'm looking at our Reuters screen right now. The Rand's recovered. We're now at 15.82 to the dollar. The oil shares up 2.68%. Things are looking a little bit better than yesterday. We're sort of gaining ground back again. But Vanessa, what should businesses be doing to make sure that this doesn't continue? Because both of you have been quite right so far. If we carry on down this, our economy, which is so fragile at the moment, Vanessa, it's just going to get worse and worse. And then the overall picture is going to be terrible.
Yeah, I think, you know, moving away from the health impacts that we've and considerations that we've been talking about, I think businesses really need to evaluate now where our supply chain risks are, where are our risks to revenue losses, our fit within the global economy, do we have an organization that's very reliant on Chinese projects? If we look throughout Africa, you know, Southern Africa, Mozambique, all of that with big projects that are global in their nature. But I think really understanding what are those risks to our supply chain in particular, having alternate suppliers. You know, we might be able to manage our supply chain risks, but are our suppliers managing their supply chain risks? And the trickle-on effect from that is something that could affect us way beyond what we can ever actually predict or try and preempt. So really understanding our organizations incredibly carefully in terms of what can be impacted on. High absenteeism. As we said, we may be, if we're not in a high-risk category, health-related, but there may be other people in our organization who will be, that there will be a high absenteeism rate. Maybe not a high death rate, but absenteeism or needing to look after our elderly parents who have now contracted it, or ill people in our families. So it's looking across such a massive spectrum of different touch points that can now affect our organizations. And I think if each organization, small, medium, or large, our parastatals, our SOEs, everybody can start managing and looking at their risks and trying to mitigate them, we'll then hopefully get to a point that we are not seeing the economic impacts as devastating as they potentially could be. But it's really all of us playing our roles.
Playing our roles. Now, this is the thing as well, because you're going to also have employees, and we've sent quite a few employees home who have normal flu, and a lot of people are just not feeling well. So already we're battling, and corona hasn't hit us just yet.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's going to be the issue, is now what is a common cold? We're heading into winter, and what is now a more hectic virus or coronavirus that we have to be aware of. So, and also you have your psychosomatic, you know, we have a sore throat, but now it's almost all of a sudden it's worse. It's the symptoms of COVID-19. What are we now? It's going to be exacerbated, and we're going to have this sort of paranoid feeling of looking at our symptoms in light of something else other than a common winter cold or flu. So it's human nature that we're going to have this issue, but I think we need to get the facts. So William Kesey, there was an article on Daily Maverick that quoted him this morning saying not to listen to the Facebook and WhatsApp experts.
Yeah.
So get the exact facts of what the symptoms are. Are you in a high-risk group? And not having this, different people and Dr. Internet telling us what's actually wrong with us. And another issue was obviously was allowing these test kits to be freely available, that there'd be a run on the actual test kits. So I know the medical profession is trying to keep that very strictly controlled as well, because people will just decide, oh, let me get myself tested and so on. But really just looking at what your risk level is. I live in a small town in the Karoo. We're probably too hot here for the coronavirus to even survive. I'm not too worried. But then also myself or my family or anyone I've come in contact with has not traveled either. So I think we really need to, if you do have symptoms, have you come into contact with anyone that could have passed it on? Have you been through an airport? Have you been to a conference or an event where you could have become exposed? And I think our employees really need to just have the exact facts from Centers for Disease Control, from the World Health Organization, and not from Dr. WhatsApp and Facebook.
Yeah, Graham, it's so difficult, and Vanessa, you're quite right, because you hear the guy on the radio, you see WhatsApp, Facebook, and therefore it's true. It's a major problem. What do you think, Graham, of the national response so far? Should there be more information out there?
It's a difficult one, because I think we're all being flooded with information at the moment, and now we've got to choose our sources carefully. I agree with Vanessa entirely. That you as an organization and you as an individual need to select your sources of information carefully and sort of almost ignore everything else, so that you're getting facts and rational and calm response. But so far, from what I can see, from a national perspective, we're getting good and regular updates and information. I would make a recommendation, if you are a school or a community organization or a business, select somebody to be the spokesperson, to be the person who is the single point that all questions and answers and information comes to, and then just make that person the COVID-19 expert in your space for now, and just ignore everything else. And make sure that there's that single point of contact. The other thing I think that you should ignore, to be honest, is quite a lot of the economic data as well. Let's be honest, what happened on the markets in the last 2 days, a lot of that has got to do with the artificial intelligence robots that do a lot of trading. And when they see a dip happening, they have an automatic setting to sell off. And we knew that today they would be buying again and that the markets would all go up as they kind of switched off those automatic sales and humans got involved again and brought a little bit of rationality. We can't look at the rand against the dollar and euro and pound now, because it's not dealing with underlying realities of our economy. It's dealing with global crisis and panic, and you've almost just got to switch off all of that information for a few days, let it all calm down and settle down again. But we can't think that the South African economy is crashing simply because the stock market went down for a number of reasons. We've got to look at the underlying economic and business issues. Are our supply chains being disrupted? Yes, some of them are. That could be a problem. What are we going to do about it? Are some of the things we're going to need in this country not going to be available for a few weeks? If so, we need to make plans and think that through. But basically, our economy is what our economy was a few months ago. It's ticking over and it needs help, but it doesn't need more help because of this disease. It needs the help it was going to get. And that's what we should all just get on and focus on being South Africans and building this country the way we were planning to.
Yeah. But Vanessa, from a business point of view, you talk about supply chain management. Say, for instance, if you are dealing with Italy and you're bringing products in, or you need to just deal with Italy, that could be a massive problem. What do businesses now need to do to say, right, the future looks a little bit bleak, I need to do something about this?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, Graham touched on it as well, but in absence of looking at our contracts and any force majeure, you know, we can't just start cancelling all sorts of things. We have to look at our alternatives, but how can we manage with the existing relationships that we've got? You know, not if we're bringing wine or cheese or products in from Italy, the actual products themselves are fine. So is there a risk there? You know, looking at where could the potential impact, how could it spread based on those supply relationships? So if we're just importing products, I don't see why not. If we do need to have some sort of a virus spray or a disinfectant type thing that we could, that obviously is safe for whatever the nature of the product is. But I don't think we necessarily now need to say, well, that product's coming out of Italy, we're cancelling all our contracts, force majeure, everything's over with. Mm-hmm. I think we have to really evaluate carefully on a product-by-product, on a country-by-country basis to see if this is due for concern or not. We can't just now rule out every relationship we have.
No, sure. I think what I was sort of getting at as well, though, is that those companies in Italy may not be able to supply you with certain things because their production lines are down. Maybe as a business, you have to look elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
Graham?
Sorry, Ray. I was just going to say that there is that old adage of never waste a good crisis. And, you know, as much as, you know, we may be desperately searching for a slight silver lining on this dark cloud, there will be wonderful opportunities for entrepreneurial-minded people to step into gaps. If you have a look at what might the gaps be in the market at the moment because we can't get access to certain products and services, there are wonderfully entrepreneurial South Africans who should be working 24/7 at the moment to see what they can do to fill in gaps, both in essential products and services, but also in some of the luxuries we're going to be thinking we're doing without for a while, but maybe there's somebody out there who can provide an alternative.
Yeah. Vanessa and Graham, we'll have to leave it there. I was thinking maybe the three of us could open up a toilet paper company because it looks like there's a demand there. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm in.
Well, funny enough, it's the last of the symptoms, so I don't know why there was a run on toilet paper, but maybe that's just an Aussie thing.
It's just an Aussie thing, of course. Vanessa Terwell, Vice Chairperson of the Institute for Risk Management for the Western Cape Committee, and also Dr. Graham Codrington, Futurist at Tomorrow Today. Thanks to both of you for coming on this afternoon.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Graham.